Here we are at the junction of Buchanan Street and Sockyhole Street, and we're going to be looking at the Cleland Testimonial Building. The best place to stand is on the steps leading up to the Glasgow Royal Concert Hall. Joining me to talk about the Cleland Testimonial Building is historian and tour guide Ronnie Scott.
Yeah, it's a very interesting corner. I think if you stand and look up at it, all you can really see is some writing. Mm-hmm. It's not absolutely clear what it is. And then this definitely what appears to be something sculpted above it. So that our view is taken to right to the very top of the corner,
yes,
as it turns.
Yes, absolutely.
If we go to the top of the steps of the concert hall, we can look across and we can see that it says the Cleland Testimonial. And that what we're looking at above that is some kind of coat of arms. So if we start with the Cleland, and then we'll explain the testimonial. Cleland is a chap called James Cleland, who started off as a cabinet maker in Glasgow and was very involved in the trades house. And cabinet makers joined what's called the Wrights, W-R-I-G-H-T-S, and the other workers in wood. So within the wood trade, mm-hmm. he rises to become a deacon of the Incorporation of Wrights, and then goes on to become deacon convener of the trades house. So he's a representative or chair, if you like, of all of the trades of Glasgow. Quite a responsible position. And parallel to that, he has a career in the town council. He works his way through the ranks. He becomes a person of power, responsibility in the city. Mm-hmm. He's then appointed to this position where he's in charge of all public works. Right. His position is part of the professionalisation of the Glasgow Town Council. And at various points, he uses unemployed people to mm-hmm. flatten Glasgow Green. He's a hugely influential figure in statistics. By his own hand, he conducts a census of Glasgow.
Yeah, which is important because that's the first time that's actually been carried out in the UK as a whole since Roman times.
Yep. So he sees that as an important thing about who have we got,
yes.
who can be paying rates, and what do we need in the future?
Yes, he's a kind of prototypical planner. He's about a century ahead of his time.
Yes, and he stays in Upper Great Nile Street, which is the top of West Nile Street. He's a partner in a firm that supplies marble, which is towards the top of Buchanan Street. He builds St George's Church, mm-hmm. now better known as St George's Tron. That's his area of the mm-hmm. city. Now, it's not that long developed in 1800. He's living at the edge of town.
Yeah, very
he's
much.
He's very much involved
in the countryside.
And he's involved in making that part of Glasgow and making it a very important and visually attractive part of Glasgow. So he has a very important time in Glasgow's development. And he's very much in the thick of all of that. But 1834, he resigns. He's seen as an old conservative.
But still a hugely respected figure.
Very much, particularly since he's been writing books on the history and the development of Glasgow. Statistical works. He's the first person who writes bills of mortality mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. reputable. He's building up a portrait of Glaswegians that nobody's had before. And as you say, no other city has been doing this.
Absolutely. So this brings us back to the subject of the building, the idea of it being a testimonial to the man. So that's quite an unusual thing to have done at the time, because rather than erecting, say, a statue in his honour, the city fathers at that time decide that it would be a better idea to give him something that would give his family a future revenue stream.
He leaves the council in 1834, and some of his friends decide there should be a public appeal mm-hmm. for funds, and the chair of that appeal says, we don't want to do a statue to him. He's not a public figure, but why don't we give him a building that reflects what he has done for Glasgow?
Absolutely.
So that's the testimonial. It works in two ways, the word testimonial. It is a testimonial to his role in Glasgow. It's also, in the other sense of the word, it's like a benefit gig. £2,000 are given by some of the merchants of Glasgow. Another £2,600 is raised by public subscription. So the total sum is then used to procure a building at an up-and-coming part of the town. It could be anywhere in town, but they chose that area, which was close to the area that he had helped develop. And David Hamilton is chosen. He's the first professional architect in Glasgow, with a career spanning 30 years of exemplary buildings.
Yeah, and very interesting for bringing back ideas from the continent as well. So both him and his son, James. But an interesting building nonetheless, particularly because in some ways this is kind of a model tenement, because actually when you look at the floor plan of it, it has toilets in it. So, you know, enormously kind of in advance of kind of other things happening in this area. The two toilets at the back of the kind of the, there's a circular staircase on the plan, and you get two toilets tucked either side for the flats either side. A very novel idea, particularly in Glasgow at that time. So quite interesting from that point of view as well. Yeah.
So he lived in the building until he died in 1840. As far as I know, it stayed in the hands of his family. That was the intention. This was either he could live in the building and save rent, mm-hmm. or he could rent the building out. This was a long-term gift, not just something that either here's a gift, but we've left it for you in George Square. It's a statue, can't do anything with it.
Very interesting idea. And building as well, and the detailing of the building is very interesting too, particularly the way that kind of turns the corner, because that's quite a German device, that the way that the bow is incised into the corner. And then you've got this fantastic heraldic shield that sits on top of the building. That was William Mossman, so the father of John Mossman, who designed that. But it's the coat of arms for Cleland, bringing the kind of the story more up to date. The building thereafter, obviously, at some point changes hands. And so ownership moves on and eventually becomes the George Hotel, which becomes much later on in the 20th century. Well, it's used for a lot of filming. And so it's episodes of Taggart, Shallow Grave, the film Shallow Grave. It was used as the sets in that.